Lord's travels to Vrindavan. So he was traveling from Jagannath Puri, as we are, towards Vrindavan. So once before, Lord Chaitanya had wanted to go to Vrindavan, and he'd asked all of his devotees if he could, if they would let him go. And they had said to him, he said, in the Kartik month, I want to go to Vrindavan, and they said, why don't you wait just a little bit longer? Why don't you wait until after Dol Yatra, and then you can go? And in this way, they kept putting him off and putting him off, because they were actually quite frightened of the separation from him, because he may be gone for a very long time. So then finally, he said, I want to go, and he was very, very firm, and he said, I want to go via Bengal and see my mother, and I want to see the Ganga. And of course, no one could say anything, because it was his will. And he also commented that you have so many times you have been stopping me by trickery, but please now give your permission. So the devotees said, yes, you can go. But they were very worried to have him go. And they followed him quite, some of the devotees followed him, Savabhauma Bhattacharya, and even Gadadhar Pandit, who had taken a vow, like we heard in Tota Gopinath, to never leave Jagannath Puri and to never give up his service to Tota Gopinath. He abandoned his service to the deity just like that. Yes, just like that. He said, I can't leave you, because he understood who Lord Chaitanya was. So Lord Chaitanya said to him, look, you're giving up all your regulative principles. He said, but I can't leave you. So it was more important for him to go with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu than his service to Gopinath. And so then Lord Chaitanya said to him, look at you. You're breaking all the regulations by doing this. And he said, let all the rules and regulations go to hell. I don't even care. So Lord Chaitanya, externally, he appeared to be displeased with him. This is not proper. But internally, he was actually pleased with him, because his devotion was higher than even his regulation. So then the next thing happened was that they went to the bank of Mahanada River, I think, just near Cuttack. And from there, Lord Chaitanya wanted to go alone. So when he got into a boat, he boarded a boat. Then at that particular time, what happened was that Gadadhar Pandit fainted in separation, and Savabhauma Bhattacharya had to pick him up and tell him, let's go back to Puri. And Lord Chaitanya actually protected his vows, because after that point he would have left Puri. After that point, he was still within Puri. So he went alone from there. And Lord Chaitanya went to Navadweep, Koladweep, Kuladweep, Kulia, where we went to the place where the offences are forgiven. And he went to different places in Navadweep and saw his devotees, his mother, the Ganga, as he had planned. And then he wanted to go on, because he had received letters from Rupa and Sanatan at Ramakeli, which is further north. So he went on up to meet them. And then Sanatan Goswami, by the time he got there, he had so many people following him. He was so attractive, and they were so drawn to his ecstatic kirtan, that he had so many people there that Sanatan Goswami, in a very diplomatic way, he said to the Lord, actually, this isn't the best way to go to Vrindavan, surrounded by so many people and in such an entourage, because it will be very unpeaceful for you. And one should actually go to Vrindavan in a very internal mood, seeking the mercy of Krishna. Where is Krishna? So Lord Chaitanya took these words seriously. And there's a story also about one brahmachari named Sringananda, who had a deep meditative relationship with Lord Chaitanya. And he had meditated a road. And his bhakti was so mature that by this meditative road that he was creating, it was so transcendental that Lord Chaitanya was actually walking on the road. He would walk this road. And he was making the road paved with jewels, not like what we saw when we were coming from Mayapur, congested with big trucks and you know, and bicycles and all kinds of disturbing factors. So he made this beautiful road, and on the side of the road he had meditated ghats and trees and kadamba trees, and the whole district that he was meditating was very serene. But he could only go up to a place called Kanai Natshala, and he was making this road in his mind step by step. Imagine his devotional concentration, that he was like changing everything from what it was to what he wanted it to be in his mind. And when he got to Kanai Natshala, that place, he tried and tried, and his meditation didn't go any further. It couldn't go any further than that. And so he concluded in his own mind that Lord Chaitanya wasn't going past that point. So then he told all the devotees very conclusively. He said, Lord Chaitanya will go to Kanai Natshala and then he'll come back. So they didn't know whether to believe him or not, because this was a long time before. But in actuality, that was what Lord Chaitanya did. When he got to Kanai Natshala, he thought to himself, Sanatana's instructions were right. I should go to Jagannath Puri by myself, not with this great crowd of people chanting. And they would pick up the dust from his feet when he was walking. And so the roads, the pathways looked like the roads to Calcutta with big, because everyone's picking up dust and making holes in the roads and the pathways, putting somewhere. And so there's so many people in such a crowd, he decided this isn't the right way to go to Vrindavan. So then he went back to Jagannath Puri. And when he came back to Jagannath Puri, everyone was so happy to see him return, because they didn't expect that he would return. And then he said to them all, he said, I have had to come back because, he said very sweetly, I made an offense to Gadadhar, because he didn't want me to leave, he wanted to come with me, and I said, no, no, you can't come. And so therefore, because I didn't have his blessings, I've returned. So he was speaking in this way very sweetly and lovingly with his devotees, and they were all relishing the fact that he'd come back. But then again he said, he was expressing that I want to go to Vrindavan. And again they started saying, why don't you go after this time, after that time? And so then he said, I wish to go to Vrindavan. I want to go alone. I don't want to go through any towns or villages. I want to go straight through the jungle. And so then Lord Nityananda said, and he said, I don't want anybody with me who's a known person. I don't want to take anybody who the others will be envious of. And people will say, oh, you took that person, you didn't take this person. I don't want that. So he said, all right. They said, but there's one person that you can take with you. His name's Balabhadra Bhattacharya. And Swarup Damodar had been watching this Brahmin for quite some time, because he wanted the exact right sort of person to go. And what he had in mind was somebody who was somewhat calm and peaceful and self-controlled. Because when Lord Chaitanya went to South India, he took with him Kala Krishna Das. And Kala Krishna Das, inconceivable to us, he became attracted away by these gypsies, and they took him. They lured him away by the power of some gypsy women that they had. And he left Lord Chaitanya's side. And Lord Chaitanya had to go to the place where he had been captive, and actually forcibly bring him back. So Lord Chaitanya said, I don't want someone like that. I don't want somebody who's restless, who maybe will leave me. And so Swarup Damodar said, this Balabhadra Bhattacharya is very calm and quiet and very self-controlled, and I think he's a suitable person. And then Nityananda said, and you should take one more person. Say again?
In the basket there, on the white bag in the ground.
So he said, I want to go in this secluded way. If you can find somebody peaceful, then we'll go. So he did. He arranged that. And Balabhadra Bhattacharya, Nityananda said, take one man to carry the lota and the other outer cloth. And I was just looking through here. It says that he agreed. And there's one reference to two men going. But then later on, there's so many references to only one man going. So it's not quite clear. So then they started off walking. Lord Chaitanya left in the early morning when nobody was around. Everyone, all the devotees were asleep. So that they woke up in the morning and Lord Chaitanya had gone. So this was his arrangement. And he started walking by the solitary path, so no one would be knowing where he went. So then he walked through to the Jarikanda forest. This Jarikanda, it is said, is the description of it is that it's a great tract of land. In another reference it says it was in Madhya Pradesh, but it seems like either the state boundaries have changed, or now it would be within Orissa or Bihar, because we went through out of Orissa through Bihar, and then we've turned around and come back into Orissa, and we go through Orissa further. At a place called Kharagpur, they changed the, when you go to Kharagpur they stop and another engine is attached to the train, and then you go. So now we were at the end, we were at the start of the train when we left Puri. Now we're at the end of the train. So that happens at Kharagpur, and then after that, then we go on from there. So Lord Chaitanya is walking through Jarikanda, and as we know, he passed through different villages there, and there were tigers and deers and different wild animals even. And by the power of his chanting, Balabhadra Bhattacharya was terrified. There were some tigers sort of walking behind. He was sort of Bengali. Bengali's a little scared of things like that. But Lord Chaitanya just turned around and asked them to chant, and they started dancing on their back legs and chanting, and even so much so that there was some deer and some tigers, and the deer and tigers were like dancing with each other. So this was the arrangement of Lord Chaitanya as they were continuing forward. So then there were many birds and peacocks that started to follow them. And the Lord saw all the creepers and trees, and he was also telling them to chant. And he was telling all living entities that he saw throughout the Jarikanda to chant Hare Krishna, chant Hare Bol. So then it explains that from there, Lord Chaitanya went from Jarikanda, and anything he saw reminded him of Vrindavan. If he saw a hill, he thought it was Govardhan. If he saw a river, he thought it was the Jamuna. And his ecstasy and his love of Krishna increased in seeing each one of these places, and his desire to get to Vrindavan also increased. So then people would bring things for him and cook things for him as he was going along. And Balabhadra Bhattacharya was taking care of him as he was passing. And he thanked Balabhadra and he said, I'm so grateful for you for taking care of me, because you've made all these different arrangements. I haven't had any inconvenience as we've been traveling along. He said, when I went to Bengal, I was very happy to see my mother and the river Ganges and the devotees. However, when I started for Vrindavan, many thousands of millions of people gathered and began to go with me. Thus, I was going to Vrindavan with a big crowd. But through the mouth of Sanatan, Krishna taught me a lesson. Thus, by making some impediment, he has brought me on a path through the forest of Vrindavan. So it's also interesting how Lord Chaitanya sees like that. That Krishna, he sees Krishna behind everything. So he sees Krishna speaking through the mouth of Sanatan. And Krishna is making the impediment. And Krishna is making the impediment to make a better arrangement. Not making the impediment just for no some clumsy purpose, but he has a better arrangement. He wants to take him on a path through the forest, which is actually what he really wanted. So he says, it is only by your kindness that I am now so happy. Then Balabhadra replied and said, my lord, you are Krishna himself, therefore you are merciful, and I am a fallen living entity, but you have bestowed a great favor upon me. Sir, I am most fallen, yet you have brought me with you. Showing your great mercy, you have accepted food prepared by me. You have made me as if your carrier Garuda, but I am actually just a crow. Anyway, you are the independent Lord, you can do as you want. So after offering these loving exchanges, they finally came, so it describes only Jarikanda, and then arriving in Kazi or Benares. So maybe after we can look at the map and you can see where Benares is, because it's quite probably a more direct route than the one that we're taking. I don't think we go to Benares. So there at the Manikarnika gut. Mani means a jewel and Karnika means from the ear. And it is said that at that particular gut, Lord Vishwanath, Lord Vishnu, a jewel fell from his ear. When it doesn't actually say what pastime that is. So at that particular place, one devotee who we heard about earlier, Tapana Mishra, who had been in East Bengal, and Lord Chaitanya had told him, I want you to go to Benares. And you can imagine he's seeking somebody to give him association to study the Bhagavatam. And he's living in East Bengal, which is part of Nadia, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Gaudadesh. And Lord Chaitanya tells him, go to Benares. Benares is the home of impersonalism. But he went, because Lord Chaitanya told him, later on I have a plan, so I want you to be there. So one day he's taking his bath, and he sees this beautiful sannyasi, lustrous and very effulgent, and he realizes that this is actually Lord Chaitanya. So he goes up to him, and he offers very beautiful prayers, and he invites him, please come to my house, because now his the plan on which he had asked him to go there is now fructifying. So he stays with Tapana Mishra, and he has one friend called Chandrasekhar. And Chandrasekhar is in the doctor caste, but he's taken the position of a clerk. And Chandrasekhar comes and meets the Lord there, and he offers his prayers, and he says to the Lord, I am very, very unfortunate. It is due to my past misdeeds that I have been asked, that I have been born in Varanasi. Because here I do not hear anything but the words Maya and Brahman, because the Mayavadis, they don't speak the names of Krishna. So he's lamenting also that this place is so impersonal. And they're glorifying Lord Chaitanya for coming and being with them. And so Lord Chaitanya stayed there for, I think, a week at their request. And at that time, one Maharashtrian Brahmin came to see Lord Chaitanya, and he told a very sad story. He told how one Brahmin that he knew had gone to one very, very extremely learned impersonalist known as Prakasananda Saraswati. And he had gone to him and told him, you know this Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? He is here in Benares. He is very wonderful. He has beautiful features. He has beautiful long arms. He's effulgent. He's actually Lord Krishna himself. And Swami Prakasananda had spoken very, very, very painfully about Lord Chaitanya. He had said he had called him a pretender. He laughed when he heard what the Brahmin said. He said, yes, I've heard about him. He's a sannyasi from Bengal. He's very sentimental. I have also heard that he belongs to the Bharati Sampradaya. However, he is just a pretender. So imagine how the Brahmin felt hearing this about Lord Chaitanya. He says, I know his name is Chaitanya, and he's accompanied by many sentimentalists. His followers dance with him, and he tours from country to country, from village to village. Whoever he sees him accepts him as God. Since he has some mystic power by which he hypnotizes people, everyone who sees him becomes illusioned. And he went on to say, he's actually a sannyasi in name only. Actually, he's a first-class magician. In any case, his sentimentalism cannot be very much in demand here in Kazi. So he spoke very harsh words about Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya, then he told him, don't go to see him. You just continue studying the Vedanta. He said, if you associate with upstarts, you will be lost in this world and in the next. When the Brahmin heard these words about Lord Chaitanya, he became so disturbed and grief-stricken that he immediately went to Lord Chaitanya and he told him what he had heard. And he, chanting the names of Krishna, he became very, very, very disturbed. And then he said to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya, when he heard, he just laughed. And the Brahmin said, when he wanted to say your name, he couldn't say Krishna. He could say Chaitanya, but he couldn't say your name. And he said, why? He says Chaitanya, Chaitanya easily, but he can't say Krishna, your name. And he says, this is because Mayavadis are great offenders unto Lord Krishna. Therefore, they simply utter the words Brahman, Atma, Chaitanya, like that. Because they are offenders to Krishna, who is identical with his holy name, the holy name does not manifest on their mouths. Then, after speaking of their misfortune, Lord Chaitanya says something interesting. He says, they're great atheists, so Krishna's name does not come from their mouth, but, he says, I have come to Benares to sell my emotional, ecstatic sentiments, but I cannot find any customers. If they are not sold, I will have to take them home. So in this way, he's explaining wherever he went, Lord Chaitanya would chant and dance, and everyone would become ecstatically attracted to him. Everyone would become a dear devotee, lover of Krishna. But here in Benares, the people were so impersonal and jnanis that they were not interested in his transcendental commodities. So he was saying, if I can't sell them here, it will be a burden for me because I will have to carry them home. And then he says, I have brought a heavy load to sell in this city. To take it back again is a very difficult job. Therefore, if I get but a fraction of the price, I shall sell it here in the city of Kasi. So in other words, because they're offenders, more Lord Chaitanya wanted to give mercy. They weren't interested, but he still, by any means, he wanted to give them his mercy. So then after that, having spoken like that, Lord Chaitanya accepted that Brahmana who came to him as his devotee, and the next morning, very early, he left to go to Mathura. And so then those three devotees, now there were three, they gathered together and they kept each other in memory and thought of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya, he went next to Prayag, and it is said in the purport that the city of Prayag is a few miles from the city of Allahabad. So we can have a look at the map after. So Allahabad, Prayag. Prayag is where the Magh Mela, the Kumbh Mela takes place. So he went from Benares to Prayag. And there in Prayag, he stayed for 3 days. And he delivered many people with the holy name of the Lord. But as soon as he saw the Jamuna, because Prayag is where the Jamuna, the Ganga and the Saraswati is flowing underground, but these three rivers meet. And as soon as he saw the Jamuna, Lord Chaitanya immediately, in the same mood that he, when Jarakanda, he would see rivers as being the Jamuna, in an even more intense mood, he threw himself into the Jamuna. And he became unconscious, floating in the river Jamuna. So Balabhadra Bhattacharya had a difficult job, actually, as his caretaker, because many times Lord Chaitanya would do very, seemingly very dangerous things, such as this. So Balabhadra got him very quickly out of the water and raised him up. So he stayed there for 3 days. And then, from there, from Prayag, he came to Mathura. And when he came across the river Jamuna several times, as soon as he saw the river Jamuna, he would immediately jump in, falling unconscious in the water in ecstasy of Krishna. When he approached Mathura and saw the city, he immediately fell to the ground and offered obeisances with great ecstatic love. So when Lord Chaitanya entered the city of Mathura, he took his bath at Vishramghat. Then he went to visit the birthplace of Krishna, the Janmasthan. And there he saw the deity of Keshavji, which is the deity that has been installed at the Janmasthan. So it says here, at one time Keshavji Mandir was attacked by the Emperor Aurangzeb, who constructed such a big mosque there that the temple of Keshavji was insignificant in comparison. But with the help of many rich Marwaris, the temple has been improved and a very large temple is now being constructed, so that the mosque is now appearing diminished in comparison. So practically you see that when you go there, there's a very big temple now. But in years when we first came to Vrindavan, there was a very little temple and a very big mosque. So the Indians determined to raise a very big temple to challenge the big mosque. In Mathura and in Ayodhya and other very important Leela stans, where the Moguls were in, they broke down many, many temples, and instead they put mosques in the same place. And when, in return, the Hindus wanted to break a mosque, well, that was very, very bad. Then hundreds and thousands of people would be killed because the Muslims were very fiery, as my husband calls them. What does he call them? He's got a word for them, sort of like, something like horrific Muslims, because they're very, it's part of their religion that killing others who aren't of their faith takes them to heaven. So they're ferocious. They're ferocious. So anyway, Lord Chaitanya came to see the deity of Keshavji. And then he danced and chanted and made a very loud vibration, and all the people were astonished to see his ecstatic love. Now when he was there, he was dancing and dancing and dancing, and one elderly brahmana came forward and started dancing with him. So the others are all, of course, watching, but this one brahmana immediately raised his hands and started dancing in the same mood as Lord Chaitanya. And the two of them embraced each other and started dancing together round and round in ecstatic love. And raising their arms, they both were calling out, "Chant the holy names of Hari, chant the holy names of Hari." So after everyone was chanting, and after the kirtan finished, then Lord Chaitanya, he was very surprised, and he took the Brahman aside, and he said to him, he started to question him, and he said, "You are a very old man, and you are very sincere, and clearly you are advanced in spiritual life. Where have you gotten this transcendental opulence of ecstatic love for Krishna?" Because the mood of the old Brahman was just like Lord Chaitanya's, and immediately they joined together and they were both dancing in the same type of spirit. So Lord Chaitanya was surprised. "How do you have this particular flavor, this ecstatic devotional mood?" And the Brahman replied and he said, "My dear sir, His Holiness Madhavendra Puri came to the city of Mathura when he was on tour. And when he was in Mathura, he came to my house and he accepted me as his disciple. He even took lunch in my house. After installing the deity of Gopal, Madhavendra Puri rendered him some service, and that very same deity is still being worshipped on Govardhan Hill." So then, when Lord Chaitanya heard that this Brahman had a relationship with Madhavendra Puri, then the Brahmana also understood that Lord Chaitanya could not have these particular emotional sentiments unless he too had a relationship with Madhavendra Puri. So he asked him in exchange, "Where did you get these transcendental feelings from?" He said, "Upon seeing your ecstatic love, I could imagine that you must have some relationship with Madhavendra Puri. This is my understanding." So then Balabhadra Bhattacharya explained that Lord Chaitanya is the disciple of Ishvara Puri, who is the disciple of Madhavendra Puri. And so then the Brahman said, "Please come to my house. It's my great good fortune that I can invite you." And then he said, "And please come and take some food." Then he said, "But your Brahman should cook," because he was in a caste that wasn't suitable to cook for a sannyasi. And Lord Chaitanya said, "You cooked for Madhavendra Puri. So if Madhavendra Puri would accept your food, then please also cook for me." So he did. And they spoke some very heartfelt words together. And then after that, coming from Mathura, many, many people came to see the Lord, and he would raise his hands in the same way and he would encourage them to chant. Then he went and visited all the 24. They're on the river Jamuna. There's Vishram Ghat, which is the main bathing place. Vishram means resting. And it's said that after Krishna... You have been on Brajmano Pukram? Yeah. Vishram Ghat means?
Vishram Ghat's where after Krishna cured Kamsa, he went to rest. Yes. Vishram means rest.
And there's 12 ghats this way and 12 ghats that way. So he visited all of these 24 ghats. They're just some steps. Some places there isn't even steps because such a long time. But he visited and took bath in the Mathura, in the Jamuna, and all these different places. And then after he had done that, the next thing he wanted to do, having taken darshan of all of the places in Mathura, is he wanted to visit the 12 forests of Vrindavan. So in effect, he went on something like a Brajmandal Prakrama. So when he went to the different forests, first he went to... What's the first forest one visits? Madhuvan. Then? Halavan then? The one named after a lotus. No. Starts with a K. No. Huh? No. Kumudvan, yes. So then we go Madhavan, Talavan, Kumudvan. Then the next one starts with a B. Bahulavan. And so he went all of these, and he went everywhere he went, the cows, when they saw him. See, this is why when Lord Chaitanya, he always wanted to go to Vrindavan, but he also had an internal reason. He wanted to taste something. And so the question could be asked, why didn't he go to Vrindavan? Why did he stay in Puri and cry all the time? He's always saying, where's Krishna? I want to go to Vrindavan. Why didn't he just go? So everything in Shastra is very, it's very subtle. And it's not that we can understand things by a kind of a regimented pattern. Like we can understand material things by formulation. You know, we can use our reasoning power and we can formulate something. We can test it and understand it and we can make a statement. Still, there are subtler and subtler and subtler levels to everything. But when it comes to transcendental knowledge, it can't be approached in that way. It actually has to be approached through the heart, not so much through the rational faculty, which is the soul's facility to deal with the material world. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about this, that the mind, intelligence, and false ego, he calls them, he uses the word, or they were in Krishna Samhita, they translate it as almost spiritual, but the word is chitta-bhas. Chitta means the consciousness, and chitta-bhas means it's a semblance almost the same as pure spiritual consciousness, but it isn't. It's different as well, because it's a faculty given to a conditioned soul. A pure spiritualist doesn't use these, doesn't have these faculties. This is part of a conditioned soul's mechanisms for coping with this material nature. So for us, it has to come very much through very faithful hearing with a desire to actually make spiritual advancement. And that's the only way that we can actually bypass the rationality faculty that understands and can define everything for us, but actually cannot reach into the spiritual realm. And by that process, by the other process, the process of the faithful hearing and serving, through that process, then intelligence becomes purified. And as the intelligence becomes purified, it no longer interferes with the pure intelligence or pure consciousness. It doesn't act as a buffer, it's necessary to perform a function here in this world, but it isn't required on the transcendental level. So Lord Chaitanya, he went to these different places, but whenever he went somewhere, all the cows, all the birds, all the peacocks, as soon as they saw him, they knew exactly who he was. They could immediately recognize him. They were Raj residents. And here he was. He was golden in color, but he was clearly to them, he was Krishna. So he could not feel any separation there. He couldn't feel the feelings that he wanted to feel, because everybody immediately said, ah, here is Krishna. So we hear how the cows on Govardhan Hill, when he came nearby, they started mooing very loudly. And when he saw them, they came up to him and began to lick his body out of great affection. And when he saw, and in exchange, the cowherd men couldn't get the cows to leave him alone. They were trying to pull their cows back, but they wouldn't. And the does and the bucks, when they saw the Lord's face, they too began to lick his body. Not being at all afraid of him, they accompanied him along the path. And the bumblebee and the birds, like the parrots and cuckoos, all began to sing loudly, and the peacocks began to dance right in front of the Lord. So everybody became jubilant. Ah, Krishna is here. So this was their mood. So then when Lord Chaitanya himself, when he saw the blue neck of a peacock, the beauty of the peacock reminded him immediately of Krishna, because he's in the mood of a devotee not in the mood of Krishna himself. So when he saw the blue of the peacocks, he remembered Krishna and he fainted. So then Balabhadra, the Brahmin had to take care of him. And they very hastily sprinkled water all over his body. And they took his outer cloth and they began to fan him with it. And they chanted the holy names of the Lord and he regained consciousness. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya went from forest to forest to forest, chanting the holy names of Krishna. It said, Krishnadas Kaviraj tells us, that Lord Chaitanya's mind was absorbed in ecstatic love at Jagannath Puri. But when he passed along the road on the way to Vrindavan, his love increased 100-fold because he was thinking, I'm going to Vrindavan. The Lord's ecstatic love increased 1,000 times when he visited Mathura. He's now in Vrindavan. But it increased hundreds of thousands of times when he wandered in the forests of Vrindavan. So he was so happy to be in Vrindavan. So it's interesting when we read about it, because the devotees very quickly took him out of Vrindavan, as we hear the pastime. They didn't want him to stay in Vrindavan very long, because wherever he went he would faint and he would have some transcendental experience, and they were worried he'd fall into the Jamuna. And someone, one wise person came and said, I think it's not so good that he's here, you know, because what would happen if you weren't watching one day and he fell into the Jamuna? This would be very difficult. So Lord Chaitanya was destined not to stay in Vrindavan for very long by his own arrangement. So he went from place to place, and Krishnadas Kaviraj says, I have written a description of the ecstatic love of Lord Chaitanya that he manifested in one of the places he visited while walking through the 12 forests of Vrindavan. To describe what he experienced everywhere would be impossible. Lord Ananta Shesh writes millions of books elaborately describing the transformations of ecstatic love experienced by Lord Chaitanya in Vrindavan. Since Ananta Shesh himself cannot describe even a fragment of these pastimes, I am simply pointing out the direction. The whole world became merged in the inundation of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. One can swim in that water to the extent that one has the strength. So then Lord Chaitanya continued chanting and walking and visiting the forests, and then he came to Govardhan. And when he came to Govardhan, before he came to Govardhan, he asked some of the villagers, he came to a village called Aritagram, and he asked the villagers in that place, he said, do you know where is? And?
Shyamakund.
He said, does anyone here know where is Radhakund and Shyamakund? Nobody knew, because Radhakund and Shyamakund had become hidden. So just like you see, there are places, even to this day probably, in Vrindavan, underground, there are deities waiting to be rediscovered. Deities that were worshipped for hundreds and thousands, sometimes thousands of years. And by the pujari burying them, or over time, they have become aprakat, or hidden. And when the right personality comes with the right degree of devotion, then somehow or another he's in a dream, or somehow or other he's directed to a place and he finds a very old deity. So this is not, you know, we don't have the qualifications for this kind of discovery, but there are exalted personalities who will come in the future who will bear the markings of great Vaishnavas who can do these things. So similarly, places become invisible, and only great personalities can rediscover them. Like in Navadvip, we go to the yoga pit, and only a great personality can say, this is actually the yoga pit. Now, another person may say, I could set up a little temple here and a guest house, and it would be quite fruitful. I could say, this is somewhere around here is the yoga pit, and I could make a good living like this. So there's that class of people, but to actually discover a transcendental, hidden, holy place, it takes a transcendentally pure consciousness. So Lord Chaitanya sent Rupa and Sanatan to Vrindavan to uncover holy places, which they did with the help. Some places it is said that they used to sleep under different trees at night, and the day was so transcendental and the trees were so transcendental that the trees could reveal to them what pastimes took place. This is now, here is something that goes beyond our experience. So again, this is where we have to learn to develop that aptitude to hear, eagerly to hear about Krishna with that, with the heart, instead of hearing with the head. Because that way we can transcend known experience and enter into a realm beyond that. So here, only Lord Chaitanya could find Radhakund and Shyamakund. So he asked, does anyone know? And nobody had any idea where these places were. And so then he went into some paddy fields that were nearby. And in those paddy fields he started to take bath. Imagine this sannyasi, he just walks just, and there's a little water in the field and he starts taking his bath. And then he says, this is Radhakund, this is Shyamakund. And then the followers of Lord Chaitanya, Raghunath Das Goswami and others, they excavated those two paddy fields to the point that now when we go to Radhakund and Shyamakund, we'll see that they're very clearly demarked with steps going down on most sides and temples all the way around them. But at that time there was nothing like that visible. So he went to Radhakund, he found Radhakund and Shyamakund and he glorified them all. He said, because of its wonderful transcendental qualities, Radhakund is as dear to Krishna as Srimati Radharani. It was in that lake that the all-opulent Lord Krishna performed his pastimes with Srimati Radharani with great pleasure and transcendental bliss. Whoever bathes just once in Radhakund attains Srimati Radharani's loving attraction for Krishna. Who within this world can describe the glories and sweetness of Radhakund? Then Lord Chaitanya took some mud and he had it dried and he used it as tilak and he put Radhakund tilak on his body. Then he went to Govardhan Hill. And when he came to Govardhan Hill, he was so happy. He took one rock and he started embracing the rock and he became mad with happiness. Then he came to the village known as Govardhan and he went to see Haridev. So maybe we would have the good fortune, we also can embrace a rock. We may not become absolutely mad, overwhelmed with happiness, but we can follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's example. We can visit also the Haridev temple. It's still there. The temple is extremely old and the deity is not the original deity. The original deity was taken elsewhere because of the Muslims, but the deity is also quite old. It is there in the Haridev temple. Haridev is an incarnation of Lord Narayan and his residence is on the western petal of the lotus of Mathura. So when Lord Chaitanya was chanting and dancing there, people were very eager to offer him, to invite him to their village and so many different things, and he visited all the places around Govardhan Hill. He went to Anayur, which is the place where they put all of the offerings. When they were feeding Govardhan, they put everything at a place that was then called Anukutgram, but it's now, the name is Anayur. And sometimes, what is the reason why it's called Anayur? What does Anayur mean? Yes, yes. Kiriya just saying, more, more, more. And what satisfied him finally?
Tulsi.
Yeah. So then, Lord Chaitanya had heard, remember, from that Brahmana, who perhaps was with him, that Madhavendra Puri's deity, the deity that Madhavendra Puri loved so much, that he walked right from Vrindavan to, now we're looking, we'll see when we look on the map how far he walked. He walked from Vrindavan to Jagannath Puri without even a thought. He didn't think, whoa, that's pretty difficult. Maybe I could get somebody else to do it. You know, or maybe I could have him shipped, you know, whatever. He just immediately took off when the deity told him, I'm very, very hot. So please go get some sandalwood because I've been underground for such a long time. So Madhavendra Puri immediately, very, very, very transcendental personality, Madhavendra Puri. So he walked all the way from Vrindavan, first to a place called Remuna. And there he saw the deity of Gopinath, and we heard how Gopinath hid a pot of his special offering behind his chadar, and then he told his pujari in a dream, take this and give it to Madhavendra Puri. Because Madhavendra Puri was thinking, I could make that for my Gopal deity in Vrindavan if I knew how, if I tasted it, he was expert enough to know how to actually make it. So then as he went to Jagannath Puri, he got the chandan, and when Madhavendra Puri came back to see Gopinath, then the deity Gopal came in a dream and said, actually, you can offer it all to Gopinath, because he was prepared to carry all these bags and bags. We see just carrying, 10 kilos of Gopi Chandan, you know how heavy it is. He had bags of wood, so he was carrying all this. So he said, you please just offer it to Gopinath instead, and my body will become cool because we have the same body. And it took him a year to offer all that Chandan. He stayed there offering Chandan to Gopinath. So Lord Chaitanya was very anxious to see the Gopal deity of Madhavendra Puri, but the deity was on top of the hill. So what could he do? He's not going to climb. He's in the mood of a devotee. So he said, I can't put my feet on. Govardhan is Lord Krishna. I can't place my feet on Govardhan. So the deity came down. The deity had a plan. So thinking in this way, he was thinking he would like to see the deity, but he couldn't. Thinking in this way, the Lord remained silent, and Lord Gopal, knowing his contemplation, played a trick. Coming down from Govardhan Hill, Lord Gopal granted an interview to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was unwilling to climb the hill, thinking himself a devotee of Krishna. Gopal stayed in a village called Anukutagram on Govardhan Hill. The villagers who lived in that village were mainly from Rajasthan. So what he did was, one man went up to the temple and said, I have heard that there are Turkish soldiers nearby and they're going to come and attack. So you better bring the deity down from the temple and we'll hide him in this village. So on this trick, this was Gopal's trick, they immediately brought the deity down and they said, the Turkish soldiers are now preparing to attack your village. Flee this village tonight, but do not allow one person to remain. Take the deity with you and leave, for the Muslim soldiers will come tomorrow. Hearing this, the villagers became very anxious. First they took Gopal and moved him to a village known as Gantuli. The Gopal deity was kept in the house of a Brahmana, and his worship was conducted secretly. Everyone else fled, and thus the village of Anukut was deserted. Due to the fear of the Muslims, the Gopal deity was moved from one place to another again and again. Thus, giving up his temple, Lord Gopal would sometimes live in a bush, and sometimes live in one village, and sometimes live in another. In the morning, Lord Chaitanya took his bath in the lake of Manasaganga and circumambulated Govardhan Hill. So then when he got to this village of Gantuli, he heard about this, that the deity was there. So when he arrived in Gantuli, he saw the Gopal deity. Overwhelmed by ecstatic love, he began to chant and dance. As soon as the Lord saw the beauty of the Gopal deity, he was immediately overwhelmed by ecstatic love, and he recited the following verse. He then chanted and danced until the day ended. Lord Chaitanya said, may the left arm of Sri Krishna, whose eyes are like the petals of a lotus flower, always protect you. With his left arm he raised Govardhan Hill as if it were a toy. Lord Chaitanya saw the Gopal deity for 3 days, and on the fourth day everyone understood, it was a hoax. There wasn't any Muslim soldiers. So they took the deity back to the temple. So then Lord Chaitanya walked with the deity Gopal as they were carrying him back to his temple, and he chanted and danced, and a large crowd also chanted the names of Krishna. Then the Gopal deity returned to his temple, and Lord Chaitanya remained at the bottom of the hill. Thus all the desires of Lord Chaitanya were satisfied by this Gopal deity, so he had his darshan. So in this way Lord Chaitanya, he passed from one place to another. And He went to all of the different forests. He went to Kamyavan, which is the one you were mentioning. Kamyavan is right up the top. It's the furthest distant forest, Kamyavan, from Vrindavan itself. It takes, I don't know if we'll go to Kamyavan this visit. It's quite a, it takes a lot of stamina to get to Kamyavan. Not so much because it's far, because it is far, but because the roads are, the roads make those Bengali roads that we drove on look like first class. Because when in Vrindavan there's so much corruption. Vrindavan is, there's many, many things that cover Vrindavan, so that an ordinary materialistic person won't be very attracted there. One time Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Vrindavan is covered by thorny bushes, salty water, and the harsh words of the local residents. But we don't understand what the local residents are saying, which is really good. Because if you could understand what they were saying, your hair would stand on end. Because they, practically speaking, my husband was saying one time, almost every second word is a swear word.
No, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's so many things. There's so many mysteries to the Dharma. You can't... Huh? Yeah, even Jai Gurupada was saying that. The Vrajavasis, they swear all the time. So when we go in with morality or logic or any of our own faculties, do you know what I mean? When we go there like that, because I had enough time there to go through all these different stages, the moral stage, the rational stage, the you know, how come stage and the why stage and everything, to the point that it finally got to the point where I could understand that you cannot understand this place or these people by any of your own faculties. One has to offer obeisances to the fact that this is Krishna's abode, it's meant for Krishna's pleasure, and only Krishna can enjoy there. In other words, you can enjoy if you want to serve him. But if you want to have your own agenda, then you'll get something, because all the trees are kalpavriksha trees. They'll give you something. But you won't get to the essence unless you actually want to develop the mood of real surrender to Krishna. And I've seen this on many occasions. Oh, look! It's the descent of a demigoddess.
Nakaji,
yes.
Maybe you can talk a little bit more about that.
Yes.
About Vrindavan and the way to see it and the way to behave. And because I think that is very important, especially for the first time.
One thing that I was thinking, yesterday, when we were at the Jagannath Mandir, when we were doing the... You come down, Saradhyaya. When we were doing the prikrama around the Jagannath Mandir, and I think the same thing was a little applied the day we went to Haridas Thakur's Samadhi, is that it's really, really important on Purikram that everybody is concentrating on the same point and not splaying out in different directions and not trying to do your own thing. And if there's some mistake, you know, I may get a little angry or something, that can be cleared. But the point that I'm trying to make, and I was speaking with Radharaman afterwards and he was agreeing on it, was that he felt that Krishna is trying to tell us something, preparing for Vrindavan. Because I was thinking as I was chanting this morning, Vrindavan is the hardest place. And we may think if we become like independent, you might think, no, this is the easiest place, this is really good, I can get around here and do whatever I want, I don't actually have to stay in a group anymore, I know what to do here, I can get my own this, I can get my own that, I can just go to the temple whenever I want, I can do anything, so what's the big deal, you're just giving me a hard time. But actually, to take a deep parikrama in Vrindavan, it's the hardest place, because Krishna's yoga maya works most powerfully in Vrindavan. We're hearing we had to go to Mayapur first and recognize we have anartas in the heart and seek Lord Chaitanya's mercy, but really understand it, that my heart is not pure. My heart is not pure, and I must understand that, and my intelligence is not pure, and I don't have yet a deeply developed mood of service. I may be an aspirant for that, but I don't have it yet. And because I don't have these things, I have to actually be careful in Vrindavan. It doesn't mean I can't do anything, I've got to be all paranoid. It doesn't mean that. But it means that I have to be attentive to to what I'm actually participating in, the form of it. It's really, really important. Because Krishna will reciprocate with you if your attitude is right. And if your attitude is wrong, and I've seen this, someone can come to the holy dharma, they can do everything, they can go everywhere, and they can go away reinforcing their false ego, really heavily reinforced. Or one can have the other experience that one can come to Vrindavan and get sick all the time and be completely miserable on the material level. And they can go away with deep realizations and actual transformation and appreciation that brings them back to Vrindavan again without a sense of fear of Vrindavan. When I first came to Vrindavan, I was living in... when I first visited Vrindavan, it was in 1974, and Srila Prabhupada was there, and we came on a train like this, and on the train we were reading Krishna book, and I had a hard time entering Mayapur. We didn't go to Puri because it was my first experience of India. And so when we were on the train, I decided I want to prepare for Vrindavan because I was a bit taken all of a sudden in Mayapur. So I was reading Krishna book and praying and reading and praying and trying to actually understand the mood to enter into Vrindavan. And on that particular trip, this devotee Vishnujan, which probably many people have heard of, he was on the train. And it was really nice. And so he just sat and he led kirtan for hours and hours and hours. And it was just a second-class ordinary train. There was about 50 devotees or so. And we had lots of kirtan and lots of reading and chanting. And when I got to Vrindavan, I could sense when I got there, well, this is a very nice place. So we went and did whatever we did there. And we came at the end. We went to see Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada asked my husband and I, he said, "How do you like Vrindavan?" And quite naturally, I said to Prabhupada, "Oh, it's wonderful, Prabhupada." And then Prabhupada said, "Then you should come and stay here." And I just looked at him and laughed. It was one of the only very natural moments. You know, I wasn't shy with Prabhupada. I just looked at him and I just laughed. And I said, "You just sent me back to Hong Kong." Because he'd taken a long time to convince us that we had to stay in Hong Kong, which was like staying in hell. And now we're coming to the holy dharma and he's saying the opposite, "You should stay here." And I just laughed and I said, "You just sent me back to Hong Kong." And he looked at me and he said, "You should come here for some months every year." But we were too immature to actually be able to read Prabhupada's instructions properly. So I took that as just a sort of a playful, friendly exchange. And I didn't understand the weight of the gravity in dealing with somebody in such a transcendental position. So we went back to Hong Kong, and I went back in good spirits and thinking, yes, Vrindavan was very nice. But we didn't think of coming some months every year. We didn't make that a priority, which in our case it probably would have saved us a lot of anxiety if we had understood what Srila Prabhupada was trying to do with us. He was trying to offer something very transcendentally sweet because he wanted us to do something extremely bitter and difficult. So he was offering the balance. If you do this, you'll be able to do this. But we were too young to actually pick that up. So instead we went back to Hong Kong, tried to go on. It was so difficult, we couldn't do it. And so we fled from the scene and we went to Australia instead. And in Australia we spent some years, actually, it took to recover a sense of affection for Prabhupada like it was then, because we had run away. And we had run away with some doubtfulness in his position. So doubtfulness came into our minds. I don't know if I trust this, I'm not sure about that. And it obscured the simplicity of our relationship. But then it was 1983 that we came. So that's 9 years later, after many different things had transpired, and that had all flowed through, we ended up coming to live here, to live in Vrindavan. And before we came, I said to my husband, "Oh, I don't know, I think it'd be nice, Vrindavan's nice, but we're coming for a year, that's a long time, I might get sick." So that was the first thing I kept thinking, I'm going to get sick. And he was very, my husband, when you go down, he goes up. Mm. Right, Radharaman? When there's a crisis, he goes up. So I'm saying, "Oh no, you know, I'm going to get sick. Don't worry about it. I can solve that. You can take pills for malaria." So he goes to the chemist and he gets malaria tablets and starts having me taking these once a week tablets. I'm taking the tablets. We go to Vrindavan, I'm very negative, he's very positive. And we got there, and I think after about less than a month, I got malaria. There I was, taking the malaria preventatives, and there I was with malaria. And so that convinced me. See, I told you I was going to get sick. I knew this, I knew that. All the negative came up. And then I lay in the guest house in the room we had all day, and he was out doing things, and I'm thinking, he's a rah-rah-rah-rah, you know, and grumbling away and feeling sorry for myself. And the other thing I noticed that really frightened me, actually, at my stage of advancement then, was when I got that sick, I started thinking, where's my mother? Because my mind drew from my recollection when I was a little child, my mother would, if you're sick, you know, she'd come and feed you things and do things and take care of me. No one's taking care of me. Where's my mother? And that quite shocked me, because I thought at the time of death, what happens if I say, where's my mother, instead of where's Krishna? So then I got a little bit better, and people did help me. You know, it took a little time for them to work things out, and they gave me some medicine for the malaria, but they didn't give me specific instructions what you do with that medicine, what you have to take along with it to make that medicine effective. And so as a result of that, slowly, slowly started getting better, and then I started feeling not so well again. And in the meantime, we'd moved from the guest house to the Goshala, which was very nice with the cows, because they were very, very calming. To have cows around you all the time, it's a remarkable experience. And at night, all the way around the rooms that we were staying in, there were cows, and the bells would go ding, 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 and they'd move. And it was really nice. But I started getting a fever, and it started getting worse and worse and worse. And so then, what happened was, before that, Kartik came, and Satsarup Maharaj came. And he had been the person who I was very close to in America. So I was thinking I needed to talk to somebody I trusted about what had happened with this malaria, because it gave me such a shock where my consciousness dropped to. So finally I went to speak with him, and I told him, I said, you know, I was here, it was just the last day before he left, and I said, I was here in Vrindavan and I got sick, and I told him everything. So he told me, he was very practical, so he said, in terms of the worry about what I remembered at the time of being sick, he said, when you get better, you can work on that. So he was very simple. And then, so I told him about my different fears and so forth. He said, our main business as devotees is to give up the mental life of fear, he said. There's one president of America said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. And he said, sometimes fear of a difficult situation is much worse than the situation when it occurs. So he said to me at that time, he said, we have to learn to give up the mental life of fear. And that really struck me, because I had just had this sort of dousing, you know, instead of being exuberant, now I was really humbled because of, you know, the sickness and so forth. And so then he told me also, he said, we should understand that in Vrindavan, there's nothing to fear in Vrindavan. And so while Steve and I was talking to him, my second bout of sickness was coming on. I was starting to have low fever, mild headache, higher fever, headache, and then he left. And this time I felt like, here, I'm getting this test again. Let me see if I can pass this test this time. So the second time I got jaundice, which was much worse than the malaria. And it was because of not taking the proper precautions when you take the malaria, because they both affect the liver. But this time it was really amazing, because I didn't have any fear, because I clung actually to what he said. I was going to hold on to that no matter what. And I was so grateful to him for having said these few things. I felt like it was the Dharma telling me this. And so I decided, I'm not afraid of this. This time I'm going to get sick, I'm not frightened. And so it got worse and worse and worse, and they finally put me into hospital. And I found I was able to maintain the mood that this, in Vrindavan, there's nothing to be frightened of. And actually, then after that, they brought me back to the Goshala, and I had to stay 3 months in the room. I couldn't even walk to the temple. I didn't even have enough strength. I'd walk out of the room for a little while, come back in. Couldn't eat any normally, only khichdi, no milk products, no normal food. But had no appetite, and only sugar all the time. Pita is this squash that you see sometimes, this white squash, and it's candied. And it didn't even taste sweet. It was like, it didn't taste bitter. But I could eat a big bag of it, and I didn't feel like I'd eaten anything sugary. And so they had a diet, and they arranged a little girl, and she came every day, and she cooked and cleaned the house. And Jai Gurupad would run and play with the cows. And I felt like I was really, really in Vrindavan at that time, like as if I was really being cared for as a reciprocation for giving up the mental life of fear, trying to, not that I could myself. And so that went for 3 months, and I think I would say I had more realizations in that period than many years in Vrindavan. And at the end of 3 months, one day I had to go to Delhi, and I thought, oh, I don't know if I can do that, but I could. And when I got to Delhi, they gave me a regular meal, and I thought, I don't know if I can eat that, but I could. And as soon as I came back, my husband said, I think we should move you from the Goshala, because it's very hard to get to the temple from there. You should move over to the guest house again. And suddenly there I was, and I was moved into a situation of service again. And I had service at the temple and so many activities. So again, life went on. And that little interlude was like something of a sort of private thing between myself and my relationship with the Dham, with the mercy of Satsarupa Maharaj's instructions. So then after that, for a long time, I would keep that somewhere. But it doesn't mean you should say, I have nothing to fear, so I can do whatever I want. It doesn't mean that. It means you try and love Krishna, and Krishna will take care of everything. He promises, I'll take care of you. And it's not even Krishna in Vrindavan, it's Srimati Radharani. She says, if you want me as Bhakti Devi, I will bless you as Bhakti Devi. If you want to see me as the mother of devotion, I will be motherly and take care of you. And if you want to serve me in the mood of the conjugal mood that Krishna and Radha and Krishna serve, I will give you that. I'll give you whatever you want. Whatever you want, I can give. So you come to Vrindavan. Don't be frightened in that sense. But be very, very, very careful that you're always trying to come back to that point of mood of service and not one of trying to enjoy. Either enjoy with our head, I like this kind of thing, I like to think about this kind of thing, I like to enjoy in this way, with our body, with our mind, with our words. Try to adopt this mood of service. And we should try to stay close together, because somehow Krishna has arranged us to be together at this time. And so this is Mahaprabhu's arrangement. So if we can tolerate the inconveniences involved, in the right mood, we'll all go back, whether we get sick, whether we don't get sick, whether we have what we would say material is so-called good experience, so-called bad experience, we'll all go back with a heart change. Because we've done 2/3 so far. It's pretty far out. I myself have never done this, actually. Mayapur, Puri, Vrindavan in this order. I've gone Mayapur, Vrindavan, or Puri, Vrindavan, or Vrindavan Mayapur, but I've never actually, and I've always wanted to do this, three in a conscious way and go step, step, step. So I think the message that I got from the last couple of times when we were together was to, straighten up, be ready to be pulled in line again. If we start to disperse mentally or physically disperse, keep together. Now, if there's so many things going on, it doesn't mean that you can't participate in things, but it means the coordination is required. And for the times that we're together in going on some place or another, that should be as much as possible, as much as practical, that should be in the foreground. If people are sick or anything, Krishna Lila is unwell, then we should try and help each other in that regard. Not sort of anyone gets kind of like out of the same mood, because that way it's there's something else about going on Kirtan that's really nice, is that it's like you become family, because you share so many things. You share these train rides and this thing and that thing together, and it makes a very strong bond, much more than in a temple. In temple you go home, you come together, but this you live together. So it breaks down a lot of things, and one takes in a lot of things too. So this was one of the things that I was thinking in terms of being together here in Vrindavan. So we will have to translate that into practical terms, and it'll be good if we can all work together on that, because you'll see it's massively confusing when we get there, because there's so many things going on already. And your mind goes, oh, I want to go and do that. Oh, I want to do that. Oh, I'll be back in a minute. You know, I'll meet you at so-and-so place. And then don't turn up, and this doesn't turn up, and they don't turn up. And this, and one has to become very patient of all of that, but very firm. Not, you know, disturbed to the degree that one can't take the variables that take place, but also not that the variables take over, and therefore we forget what our goal is. And then we've got to, together we've got to work out our itinerary. And then there'll be the Dhamma to us to come at night. And as far as I know, there's 2,000 extra devotees in Vrindavan, at least, than there were before. And last time I was here, when Radhana Swami had, you were there, right? You came with him. And he had 1,200, I think. And the temple was like a flood with people. And they, and his people are so trained, they're so disciplined. You know, I don't think we could manage his prithram. He has the people, he goes, sits down somewhere, he talks for 5 hours straight, easily, right? Non-stop. Just starts talking. Yeah. Yeah. We're so crowded. So what's going to happen is, this one part is ecstatic, the other part is really irritating because there's people everywhere. And you go to try and offer a lamp and it's just packed. It's like sardine time, you know. And but at night, he had, last time at least, I went in. At first I was like, I don't think I want to go. You know, I was feeling a little bit nervous because I hadn't been to Vrindavan with them present. And I think perhaps a little bit thinking that, oh, I wonder what they're getting that I'm not getting, because they're much more disciplined in their prakram and so forth. But he has them all like make a vow that there's no prajalta. We don't talk about anything but Krishna whilst we're in Vrindavan. And they're actually trained up enough to do that. And when they go, they just chant, and they serve. So I was feeling a little bit threatened by their standards, you know. But I came into the temple one night and I saw them dancing, and it was just incredible. Just the whole middle of the temple room, everybody was dancing. Like, not just sort of like this, but like dancing. And so my first impression, I was trying, you know, as I said, it was the first time I had seen that type of enthusiasm, and I was a little bit threatened by it. But then the next couple of times when I came in, I decided that I could take advantage of it, and I began to try to sort of warm up to the amount of faith and training and discipline and advancement that these devotees have. They generally, most of them are working. They're not full-time devotees. They come from Bombay or Pune, and they've got jobs, responsible jobs, and somebody was telling me recently that he doesn't even accept somebody, or that temple, Chaupati temple, doesn't even accept somebody to live as a brahmachari unless he has a degree. They only accept people who are, in other words, what that means is somebody who's giving something up to accept Krishna, not somebody who's thinking, if I join this temple, I'll get a green card, I'll get to America, I'll get a white wife, I'll get this. But only people who have a qualification that they're going to have to relinquish, they only want to deal with that quality of people. So this is, I'll be interested myself also to see what it's like to have 2,000 more people there. But it was very interesting for me, having done small programs like this, to see the coordination and organization of such a large body of people. So if you see them, they might look to you like a little fanatical, like, you know, that PD disease, because that was my first impression, because they stay there for the kirtan. As soon as the kirtan's over, they play their businesses, they stay together, they chant their rounds, and out they go. And you think, who are these people? You know, that was how my mind reacted at first. But then I began to see further than that, and I got over that hurdle. I began to see that this is a very interesting opportunity to see a higher level of devotion and service. And then there was another experience in 2000. When was it? When was Prabhupada sentient that they served the prasadam? What was the year that they served the prasadam? 2000 and...
That was in 2002? Yeah. Prabhupada's 25th disappearance.
And I heard this tape of Radhana Swami and Dinabandhu. Dinabandhu is our local panda. And Dinabandhu was appreciating how nicely they served the feast, because I remember from years and years gone by, Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day is huge. People come by the busloads from everywhere for the disappearance day and then they go. And when I was living in Vrindavan, it was so difficult to manage that day for the local devotees because it's such an influx and you're already feeling like, I don't think I can manage anymore. And even it was so disorganized, sometimes they would be serving upstairs the prasadam before it had been offered on the altar because it was so much chaos and confusion. So on this centennial, on this particular occasion, Dinabandhu asked Radhanaswami if his people could serve the feast. And they took over the serving at Fogal Ashram. Were you there for that? You were there for that? Mm. It was nice?
Yes, no anxiety.
Yeah. And they made sure everybody was taken care of nicely?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dinabandhu afterwards, he was thanking them so much because he was the one who was managing, organizing everything. And it was interesting because he was describing how from one thing that you can do somewhere in the world in a devotional mood, when people hear about it in other parts of the world, they can become enlivened. And he was using this as an example. And he was saying how you might do something, and he used the example also of Ayendra Prabhu, how he hasn't left, he has already Indian citizenship, and he hasn't left Vrindavan in 15 years, I think. Practically, I don't even know if he goes to Delhi even. He's practically always in Vrindavan. And every night he has kirtan in the temple. And so he was saying, just from this one man sitting here in Vrindavan, he's not going anywhere, he's not doing anything, but from the transference of his tapes, all over the world people are singing the same tunes that he's singing here in Vrindavan. So he was commenting on how Krishna can amplify the devotion of his devotee if he wants, so that he can inspire people that he would never ever imagine would be inspired by him. So when we see somebody who's doing that in a much bigger way than we can do, we should learn to think, wow, that's really nice, that's what I want, instead of thinking, oh, I'm not sure about that, that makes me feel uncomfortable, which was how I first felt when I came there. Oh, I don't know about this. But then I tried very hard to turn it the other way and say, that's what I want, that's just what I want to be, I want to be like that. And then one very quickly gains momentum in that particular direction. So these are just a few different points that I'm thinking that will be relevant to us when we're there. Observe the devotion of the devotees, tolerate all the rush, because Vrindavan's popular now. We should try to keep together. When we're doing something together, we should really try to be both tolerant of the difficulties, but together when we're doing it. And it will take us a little time, I would imagine, to get our bearings there on an organizational level, because we've got to get cars arranged for parikram and so forth. So we'll see what Vrindavan provides. And have no mental life of fear if you can afford it. Just say that this is Vrindavan. Radha and Krishna will take care of me. Lord Pranchatattva took care of us so nicely in Mayapur. And Lord Jagannath took care of us so nicely in Jagannath Puri and on the train. Now Lord Jagannath is handing us over into the care of Srimati Radharani Radhashyama Sundar. So we should be confident and be in the mood of wishing to please them, and everything will be fine when you're in Vrindavan. But if we can all encourage each other like that, then that will be the success of our life. Yes. We'll have to work that out, because are you staying for the retreat? So there's some days between the retreat and the parikram. In Vrindavan, parikrams generally go out before, because the distances to the places is longer. You might find yourself having to go an hour. For example, to get to Govardhan takes nearly more than half an hour. But if there are special people speaking, we might have to coordinate that also, because the devotees might benefit very much from hearing them. So we've got a little work to do when we get there.
Will that be worked out before we hit Vrindavan?
we're going to have put something together before, but then we're going to have to run it by whatever's happening in Vrindavan itself and adjust it. I think what would be good to work out would be lengths of things that we'd like to do, but to actually coordinate that, I think we're going to have to work to get there. I need to find out who's going, who else is going, wherever else, before I can give a final. Yeah, and there are other Prithams also going out, so we have to actually coordinate.
Need to stand up.
So probably it will be done when we get to Vrindavan. Any other?
Yeah. I spoke to the.